You're listening to Over the Top, a Great War podcast. The rat had no morals, no conscience, no scruples, no consideration, no decency, no milk of rodent kindness, no compunctions, no higher feeling, no friendliness, no anything. E.B. White. At 0550 hours on September 25th, 1915, the British opened up a major artillery bombardment on the Germans occupying a strategic trench line in a small mining town called Laws, France, close to the Belgian border. Pre-artillery bombardments prior to the launch of infantry troops had become part of the war game at this point, and artillery rounds being fired were often in the hundreds of thousands within just a few days' time. Along with the artillery, which was meant to rip apart the barbed wire on the front lines and obliterate the frontline troops, dead bodies were flung in every direction possible. This was a new type of warfare the world had never seen. By the time the British shifted their artillery to the German rear lines to make way for the assaulting troops, the ground had transformed into an apocalyptic wasteland. An endless amount of craters from the shells in every direction. Some filled with water from the season rains, some filled with dead, rotting bodies, bodies waiting to be claimed by the earth or something more sinister. The death toll by this time on the Western Front had been in the hundreds of thousands. Decomposing, bloated corpses were everywhere, spewing its putrid gases in the air. Flies would swarm the bodies, and maggots nestled inside the open cavities. The enormous amount of dead gave birth to a new enemy. An enemy every soldier in the Great War feared. An enemy who'd grow fearless in search of more flesh and blood. The air seemed to be calm on the morning of September 25th, when Private Jimmy Stewart and the rest of the King's Own Scottish Borderers, part of the Scottish 15th Division, were ordered to don their gas masks, which was more like a cloth hood than an actual protective mask. By this time, nations had begun using chemical gas, chlorine to be exact, to exterminate each other. The calm air was a concern to all the British troops preparing to go over the top that morning. They depended heavily on the wind to carry the gas onto the German lines. Instead, it was calm, almost no wind, which meant there was nothing to carry it forward. At 0550 hours, the artillery opened up with a major bombardment. Along with the artillery, 150 tons of chlorine gas was released from cylinders. This was in retaliation for the Germans using it on them at Ypres. Private Stewart and the rest of the 15th Division had their orders. Take Hill 70, then take Cité Saint-Auguste, just southeast of Laws. Despite being a newly formed division with no experience, British High Command had high hopes for these men. At 0630 hours, Piper Daniel Laidlaw of the 7th King's Own Scottish Borderers began marching across the parapet on the trench, piping, "All the Blue Bonnets Over the Border." This was their cue to go over the top. Stuart's heart was racing. He could barely breathe out of his mask. Upon stepping out into the open, he realized he was standing in a cloud of gas. This wasn't good. The lack of winds failed to carry the chlorine gas into the Germans. Instead, they gassed themselves. He knew this was bad. He couldn't take his mask off, but was having trouble breathing. It was bad enough he was claustrophobic, but now he felt as if he was suffocating. He could hear the men yelling, the piper piping, bullets cracking through the air, and artillery exploding in the distance. Then he managed to see out of the two small holes protected by a lens in the mask, bullets hitting their marks from the German machine guns and men being thrown in all directions from the artillery exploding. Men were dropping fast. Everywhere he was able to see, he could see bodies. And the earth was destroyed from the shells. He couldn't just stand there. It was too dangerous. He must continue to move. He slowly pushed forward, carefully making his way around the bodies. Some, it was too late, and he stepped right on them. He could hear the ones still with life pleading for help. What seemed like an eternity, the German front line finally came into his sights, still about 100 yards away. Although, one thing he could see clearly, which he wished he wouldn't, was barbed wire, still intact. He could see some men trying to fight their way through. Some began cutting, but nearly all were being torn apart by the German MGs. It was a trap created by themselves. First the gas, now the barbed wire. And the Germans took advantage. They waited for their enemy, and once in their sights, they let loose the destruction. Many soldiers got torn apart, limbs ripped apart, if not off. Chests were being pulverized. Even heads were coming apart. On top of the bullets and artillery, German potato mashers were exploding in every direction, making matters worse. The scene was horrific. Stuart began to suffocate from hyperventilating. He ripped his mask off and finally was able to breathe. But, almost instantaneous, he began to feel his eyes burn. There must have still been lingering gas in the air. He immediately put back on his mask when he felt this large whopping thud in his abdomen. He pummeled into the ground. An MG8 ripped into his belly. Stuart realized he'd taken a bad hit. A hit that finishes men off. Laying on his side, he looked down and noticed that his guts had begun to fall out of his belly, which was ripped open. "Oh God, don't let me die like this," he said to himself. Next to him was a headless corpse. The body was an arm's distance away. Stuart darn nearly fell on him as he was hit. He had to do something though. He couldn't just leave his guts out like that. In extreme and agonizing pain, he managed to get the belt off the dead soldier. He scooped up his guts and secured them as best as possible with his and the other soldier's belt. He lost a lot of blood. He felt an enormous amount of pain, cramping, along with thirst. And on top of that, his eyes were irritated, itchy, and watery. He must have waited hours for a medic to come along, but nobody was coming. By this time, he'd already taken his mask back off and surveyed the area. There was dead everywhere, and the earth had pits as far as he could see. He could only imagine very few made it through the front line and made it to the objective. Helpless, he began to fade in and out, thinking about his short-lived life, what he could have become, and the griefs his mom would suffer when she found out he's dead. Tears streamed out of his eyes. Stuart finally passed out. Miraculously, he came to. But by this time, it was dark out. He must have been laying there for hours and was shocked he was still alive. extremely weak, cold, in agonizing pain. He was barely holding on, but still alive, hoping somebody would rescue him. There was flares going up all through No Man's Land, providing temporary light. He could hear something. Something moving about. Something was making a noise. Then, there was more noise. Almost the same noise, but more of it. A noise like something was crawling about. He started to see shadows moving back and forth. Could this be the Germans, he first thought? Then, he believed his mind was playing tricks on him. Maybe this was the hallucination before death. But the noises grew louder, as if it were getting closer. But oddly, in all directions, he could hear it. Can't be the Germans. He would see them by now. Just then, he could see the dead body next to him move slightly. What in God's name is that? He mumbled. Just then, another flare lit up the area, and suddenly, he could see a group of rats tearing at the body next to him. They first began to tear at the uniform. He'd never seen rats so big. Then they began taking chunks of flesh and meat off the body. One was tugging on a vein from the area of the severed neck where the head once was attached. They started at the hands, then moved to the arms and legs. More quickly joined in and attacked the torso and abdomen area. Blood was everywhere, and the rats seemed to love it. It's as if they couldn't get enough as others began to lick the blood around the body. With this terrifying sight, he realized the noise he heard was the rats rushing to feast on the dead. Who knows how many were out there? Hundreds, maybe thousands. Who knows? Stuart looked towards his feet as the flare began to burn out. He could see groups of small lit up eyes standing around him, waiting to make their move. Stuart, with every bit of energy he had, began to fight them off, grabbing and throwing, yelling, swatting, whatever he could do. But he was too weak and it was too late. There was too many. And they began to attack his belly, pulling out his intestines that he tucked back in earlier in the day. One was inside of his stomach, tearing and biting at it. Then another one. They began to chew off his fingers, working their way up to the forearm. What little blood Stuart had left came spewing out. He yelled with all his might. Then a large rat, the largest of the pack, tore into his neck, tearing open his jugular. Blood was squirting and gushing out. They began to tear out his eyes, chewed off his lips, then ripped apart his neck. Stuart was gone. The next time somebody would come across him, his dead body would be down to the bones. Over in the Artois region, French Corporal Henri Fournier, a poilu with the 10th Army, had been fighting for days on the outskirts of Arras, trying to push the German 6th Army back. Prior to the kickoff of the attack on September 25th, the French bombarded the German front lines, including surrounded areas, for 5 days straight. Hundreds of thousands of rounds were fired. The earth was littered with debris from ripped apart trees, wagons, earth, and anything that stood in its way. It was unrecognizable to anybody that had seen it before the war. The front was lined with trenches, barbed wire, and craters everywhere. No Man's Land was an apocalyptic wasteland filled with nothing but death. The town of Arras was being reduced to rubble. Those on the outskirts who couldn't flee the farms, having nowhere to go, were not safe, but decided to stick around, hoping the war would avoid them. Late one night, Henry was assigned the task of fortifying the frontline barbed wire in No Man's Land. This was a common detail for soldiers on rotation in the front line, and not a very pleasant one. The Boileau could hear cries of pain in the distance, some loud, some weak. He knew not to venture far from his own front line, though. It was too dangerous alone. Hell, it was too dangerous as a squad. Because of this, most wounded were unreachable and were left to die. Fournier began to hear and see things moving in the shadows. There was full moonlight out, meaning the human eye could see at night, at least to a certain distance. He immediately began to suspect Germans approaching. But then, he realized there was too many sounds in various spots. The same sound. All around him. It couldn't be the Germans. This was something else. But he didn't know what, and he was curious. He was now at a low crawl, carefully moving over a crater mound. He looked down into another crater where he heard the closest sound. Horrified, he saw a dead Pailu being eaten by a pack of rats. Soldiers knew rats could eat a dead body, but he'd never seen it happen. And so many of them at once. It's not natural for a human to see another human being eaten. This is what nightmares are made of. He froze in shock, but not before gasping. The rats stopped together and looked at Henry with a menacing look, as if telling him he was next. Their eyes were glowing like little demons. They gave him a death stare, a sinister stare. Henry could hear more noises coming from all directions, as if more were closing in on him. He knew the man was clearly dead, so he crawled away as fast as he could, as if his life depended on it. Clearly spooked, he finally got up and ran as fast as he could. Suddenly, a bullet whizzed by him, too close for comfort. Henry dropped, hoping he was safe from the sniper and the pack of human-eating rats. His heart was pounding. Finally catching his breath, he listened for both Germans and those little demons. He didn't hear anything, but his heart was beating. Nearby, he heard a fellow Pailu pleading for help in a low, mumbling voice. "Aide-moi! Aide-moi!" Henry slowly crawled into the crater where the badly injured man was laying. He'd been ripped open by both bullets and shrapnel from an artillery shell. He was packed with dirt. This was maybe what helped him from bleeding out. He was in bad shape, though. Henry couldn't believe this man was still alive. He must have been out there for hours. The soldier seen Henry, still mumbling, "Aide-moi, aide-moi." Henry gave the signal to be quiet, not only because the Germans might hear, but now there's rats to worry about. But then, he heard the same sound, this time maybe louder. "Oh no," Henry thought. Then, dozens of rats appeared. They quickly engulfed the injured Pailu. It's as if they could smell the blood like hunting dogs. They began tearing at his face, first quickly tearing his eyes out. The cheeks were ripped off. Next, the tongue was even eaten. The poor man was violently shaking as more of the skull began to appear. The rats worked their way down to the neck and the rest of the body. The poor soldier was a goner. The rats continued to feast, this time ignoring Henry, who was frozen still with horror. Finally, Henry came to and realized he couldn't stay or he could be next. He ran as quickly as he could back to the line, taking a couple German pops while he was en route. Once he came upon his own front line, he leaped into it like his life depended on it, startling the men inside. Thinking Henry was a German, they quickly raised their rifles until they noticed it was their own. Upset and worked up, he quickly told his squad that rats are eating the soldiers, even the ones still alive. Hundreds of them, massive rats, some the size of your boot. This didn't seem to have an effect on the men, as they paid no attention to him, laying right back down for more sleep. After the fighting they'd gone through, their emotions were already damaged, along with their nerves. One of his friends said, "Henry, rats don't eat the living. They're afraid of us. You're tired and under a lot of stress. You must be seeing things. How about you get some sleep?" Maybe he was right, Henry thought. Maybe the Philippi Lou was so close to death, the rat's mistake mistook him for the dead. It's late. It's dark. Maybe he was confused or seeing things. He was, after all, under a lot of stress since the battle kicked off. All of them were. That next morning, he and his squad were pulled off the line for rotation, giving them some R&R. They headed for a farmhouse far off the front, where a nice lady would let them sleep in the barn and occasionally give them bread and wine if available. Most of the time, officers hoarded the wine, but just having a barn over their heads was enough to make them smile. But this rotation of R&R will turn out to be different. As they approached the farm, they heard a menacing scream. They ran for the house and burst it in. The nice lady was crying, yelling as loud as she could for help in one of the rooms. As the men rushed in, they immediately saw a young baby on the floor being torn apart by big rats. Massive ones, dozens of them. It was a gory bloodbath. The baby's limbs had been torn apart along with the torso. The men turned to the lady and noticed she too was being attacked. Her body was covered from head down to her legs with rats, tons of them, ripping at her flesh. She fell to the floor. The soldiers began to swat the rats away with their rifles and hands. It was pure chaos and terror. The soldiers yelling at the rats and yelling for more help, punching and kicking at the rats that now filled the room. They were now being bitten also. More rats seemed to be pouring in. By now, there was nothing left of the baby, and the nice lady went silent. She, too, was dead. Henry yelled at the squad to get out now. They managed to quickly escape out the way they came in. Other soldiers arrived to the scene a short time later. Henry explained to them that man-eating rats had eaten the baby and the lady and had taken over the house. The soldiers decided to torch the farmhouse. They must kill the rats. The house went up in flames quickly after they lined it up with as much hay as possible in the quickest amount of time. Loud cries and screeches from the rats could be heard as the house was engulfed in flames. The soldiers began to bandage their wounds around their hands. That evening, Henry and the men became violently ill, vomiting and diarrhea, followed by a high temperature accompanied by uncontrollable shakes. None of them had ever felt a sickness like this before. The rats carried a disease that brought extreme pain and death to humans by pathogens from bites or infected food that was ingested. The squad would be dead within hours, not one surviving the night. Folks, these stories I wrote were inspired by a couple books. First, The Rats, written by Master of Horror writer James Herbert, rest his soul. He wrote multiple horror books, and there's a series that follows The Rats. Maybe some of you have heard of James Herbert. If not, do yourself a favor and start with The Rats. He's a great writer, of course, if horror novels is your thing. The other book of inspiration comes from Rats, Lice, and History, written by Hans Zinsser, an American physician, bacteriologist, and author of over 200 books and medical articles. I read both books some years ago and knew both would tie in with my Great War podcast at some point. One fact, one fiction, both helped me conjure up my own version of horror for this episode. Although the two stories I wrote obviously are fictitious, stories like this aren't unheard of during the Great War. This is what makes this scary, in my opinion. Soldiers were eaten by rats in no man's land. And the unlucky ones who were still alive out there, well, you'll have to imagine that some were eaten alive. Soldiers wrote and spoke about the rats, some saying they greatly feared them, knowing they were eating their fallen comrades. Soldiers said that they'd never seen rats so big and aggressive. One soldier wrote, "The rats were huge. They were so big they would eat a wounded man if he couldn't defend himself. I saw some rats running from under a dead man's greatcoats. Enormous rats, fat with human flesh." There's the saying that you're a product of your own environment. The rats were, I hate to say this, they too became a product of their environment during the Great War. Man-eating machines. They were provided a buffet of food to dine on. A buffet that grew and grew month after month. The dead were piling up and they were going to eat to become fat rats. I mean, of course they got fat. They were like a greedy pig. They fed and fed. Naturally, they began to grow in size. And these rats that ate humans will be the same rats crawling through the living spaces in the trenches, crawling through the soldiers' food, their bunks, their kits, because that's what rats do in an environment like the trenches that's stacked with filth. Remember, the trenches probably smell to high hell. There's waste from humans, there's trash, bits of food here and there. They were often filled with water. It was a breeding ground for disease, something that would attract a rat. Really crazy story. Last year, my wife and I moved and I had to get rid of some junk that we'd been carrying around along with some empty boxes and other stuff that you gather while moving. So I filled up a truck and took it to a dump. For those that don't know, some cities in the United States have what we call dumps, landfills or something of the sort. Well, some actual cities will have a dump center where you take anything intended for the landfill or recycling. It just piles up at the site. They're really gross. They smell really bad. It's nasty. Anywho, as I was waiting in line for my turn to take everything off the truck, I saw this rat run across about the size of an American football or rugby ball, whatever. Either way, it was big. But what really caught my attention is it was missing a lot of hair and had these boils on its body and head. They were red, like really disgusting bright red. Having already read Hans Zinsser's book years ago, I'm aware of diseases that have spread from rodents to humans throughout history. And I kind of think of this when I, while I was thinking about this in my head as I saw this rat going by, I was just thinking, like, what kind of disease could this rat be carrying right now? It actually was frightening. I've never seen a rat that looked like that before. Anywho, rats during the Great War became such a problem, all sides in the war had to find a way to deal with them. They brought in cats, dogs, but that didn't really do anything. The rats remained a problem until the war ended and the men abandoned the battlefield, or at least until part two started up. Now, imagine just all of a sudden taking away this supply of human flesh. I'd have to think the rats went searching for that same thing they'd been supplied with. If you take away the source, it will go on the hunt. And they're smart, don't be fooled. They're crafty when desperate. The story about the lady and the baby, you might be thinking, is a ridiculous one. It's pure fiction. But check this out. Just back in 2017, a 14-year-old paraplegic girl was attacked while sleeping on her home in Roubaix, France. This was reported by the BBC. Apparently, she was sleeping on the ground floor. Why? I find that extremely odd and disturbing in itself. But let me stick to the story. She was attacked by multiple rats while sleeping. She suffered 45 facial lesions, 150 bites on her hands, and 30 on her feet. Some of her fingertips were bitten off. Her father found her in a pool of blood, but she did survive. Again, this sounds disturbing how this whole thing came about. Sounds like negligence, in my opinion. I mean, I have questions about the parenting and just putting a paraplegic on the floor, but I don't know the situation, and I'm not the cops. Point in this is, yes, it's rare rats will attack a living human. Mostly they go after corpses. But rare doesn't mean it never happens. Back to the critically wounded in World War I in no man's land that they couldn't move. They were surrounded by rats. I think we have an understanding that they sometimes became food and were eaten alive. Soldiers said this happened, and I'm going to believe them. It's a very scary thought thinking about a person being eaten alive by dozens of rats. It could happen, though, if the time and place were right for the rats to make their move on that unlucky person. You know, I wanted to talk about rats before I jump into 1916, because in any trench in the Great War, rodents, rats, whatever you prefer to call them, were present. It was in their nature to appear with the setting that was presented to them. This was a breeding ground for the rats to fill their appetites with human flesh and blood. This is what man created for them. Rats come with the territory. Oh, and the part about Stuart putting his guts back into his stomach, that story was inspired by the true story of a World War II veteran, Army Ranger Randall Harris. Harris was among the first to volunteer with the newly formed 1st Ranger Battalion, activated in Northern Ireland, June 21st, 1942. He took part in the North African invasion at Arzew and the Tunisian campaign. His gallantry earned him the rank of 1st Sergeant when the 4th Ranger Battalion was activated in May of 1943. He earned the Distinguished Service Cross for his performance during the Sicily invasion. His platoon got caught in a minefield that killed the company commander, wounded the remaining officers, and also wounded Harris. He suffered a gash in his abdomen, which his intestines began to extrude. He pushed his innards back into place and secured them with his web belt, then led his men out of the minefield. Still in the fight, he attacked and silenced enemy pillboxes that threatened the landing area with machine gun fire. After the battle, he refused medical treatment until all his wounded men had been attended to. Randall Harris is a stud. Now, how do I know about 1st Sergeant Randall Harris? This is a long story. I'm not going to try to draw it out. I'll try to make this as quickly as possible, but my opinion, it's a good story. So, God, I think this was somewhere between 2008 and 2010. Was already out of the military. Well, first of all, I know Randall Harris because I know my Ranger has some of my Ranger history. I've heard a lot of it because my first assignment in the Army, I was with 1st Ranger Battalion. So I knew about 1st Sergeant Randall Harris. Anyways, again, back to I think it was, I don't know, 2008, 2009-ish, maybe 2010. Somewhere in between there, me and my Ranger buddy got invited to go to the Darby Rangers reunion in the central coast of California. Apparently, the Darby's Rangers of California all got together every year, and they wanted some kind of other eras of Rangers, 90s, 80s, to the early 2000s. So me, my Ranger bud, met up with another Ranger bud. We went there. The first year I went, we get there, and they say, hey, it's too bad, you know, Randall Harris isn't going to make it. He's super sick. And I'm thinking, damn it, I'm not going to meet 1st Sergeant Randall Harris at this time. I was like, well, maybe next time. Unfortunate for me, he passed away on the next one. I never got to meet him. I was super bummed, But I actually got invited several years after that back to the Darby's Ranger reunion in California. And I got to meet a lot of great guys. I can't even tell you the stories they told. It was so fun. I'm so honored to have met these guys. It's something I'm just always going to hold near and dear to my heart. It was such a great time in my life. That I guess we call it chapter in my life. Yeah, it was fun. I'm super grateful to meet those guys. In fact, they got to a point where they couldn't travel anymore. Just make the distance to go up to the Central Coast was just a little too hard for them. They're pretty old at this point. So several of them still had it at a house in Orange County, and me and my buddy, two buddies, went and still had a good time with them. We would sip on a little wine with them. They would tell us their stories. They were just so funny and just really great, great Americans. But I'm really bummed I missed First Sergeant Randall Harris by 1 year with the group. And I am just so bummed. But at the same time, I'm so thankful I got to meet the rest of them. Anywho, that's kind of a weird story, or maybe not interesting to you, but so the two reasons how I know about First Sergeant Randall Harris. Didn't get to meet him personally, and I wish I could have, but I didn't. Anyways, a stud. So story about him tucking in his guts, that is a true story that actually happened, and that was the inspiration for that. Yeah, again, I really wanted to tell this story about the rats before jumping into 1916, which next episode is going to be, I'm going to open up with Verdun. Again, you got to know at this point that any trench line during the war, no matter what side you're on, is just a complete, you know what show. It's filled with rats and filth. This is what life has become for these soldiers up to this point. What else? Life updates. It's Monday, November 27th, as I'm recording this. Had a nice Thanksgiving weekend. If you're in America and you celebrated it, happy belated Thanksgiving Day. I hope it was wonderful for you and your family. My Thanksgiving was great up until the evening because my English Bulldog, you guys know him sometimes on the podcast. He's the silent guest that lets out some silent ones, but deadly. He tried to make a friend with a skunk, and the skunk didn't want no part of it and sprayed him right in his face, in his chest, and God, I can't even tell you what a soup sandwich the night turned into. Our house is still kind of have lingering that has that smell. Been disinfecting everything, air spray, airing out the house. My poor dog, we've just been bathing him, doing what we can, but he still has that smell out of, jeez. I don't know if any of you ever been sprayed by a skunk or have your pet sprayed by a skunk. It's the spray. It is potent. It's actually like an oil. Oh my God. It was like, it's almost like tear gas. Like you can't breathe. It's my wife's, she was throwing up. It was, yeah. So Thanksgiving was good up until that point, and then the whole weekend was just us trying to air the house out and make it smell better. I don't know. So that's my life update. I just thought a good one. Yeah. So this was, what are we, episode 61? On the next episode, I'll be jumping into 1916, going to open up with Verdun. Really looking forward to that. Hope you guys enjoyed this episode. I really try to capture that fear of no man's land, make it somewhat gory. Kind of go back to the roots of why I started this. Hopefully I captured a little bit of that. I want to thank all you listeners for your continued support. Yeah, I always say it. I just can't say it enough. You fans are the best. You're the reason I still jump on and record this podcast, because without listeners, there would be nothing. So thank you all for your support. And until the next episode, take care, everyone.